What is it? What is it?
It's about that time, y'all.
It's that fork in the road. The left, right, dump. Or don't. Snap, judgment. The podcast from NPR.
Storytelling.
Here we go. Hello, it's me, Glenn Washington. And of course, you're listening to Snap Judgment, the podcast. But today, we've got something extra special for you today because here in Oakland, we are about to film our first live television show. The thing is, we've been auditioning the finest storytellers in all the land. The studio's been crazy. We heard some crazy tales, and we were thinking, what if these walls could talk? We want to bring all this to you. We don't want to keep it to ourselves. So this special podcast, we're bringing you a behind-the-scenes, sneak peek-alicious, tantalizing look at what goes on right here. Our first story today is from writer Jeff Greenwald, often featured on her show. He always comes up with something crazy. Jeff Greenwald, listen up.
Let's do it.
It was a hot, bright afternoon in August, just a few days before the total eclipse of the sun. I found myself in Tehran with a small group of Americans who were there to see the eclipse along with everyone in Iran and a bunch of European tourists who had no trouble getting visas into Iran. Every day, there was a very lavish buffet at our five-star hotel. You see, if you're going to go to Iran as an American, the insurance companies insist that you all stay together because you never know what's going to happen to somebody if they go wandering off by themselves on the streets of Tehran. But my friend Sam and I decided that this was really way too easy for us. We did not want to be coddled and fed in the hotel. And we figured that what we would do is after the little morning break, we would sneak out on our own and try to have some fun out there on the streets of Tehran. And the first thing we did when we got out the front door into these blindingly bright, broad avenues is we looked for some trouble. We went to visit the old American embassy, which is now a military intelligence training camp, with anti-American slogans all over the front wall, including one of my favorites, which is, "The day America praises us, we should mourn." I always love that particular one, the conundrum of that statement. It's like they can't do anything right by us because when they do, the whole country has to go into a state of national mourning. And then we wandered into a few seminaries, a few of the little madrasas, and went posing for pictures next to the mullahs, the Iranian mullahs. And normally this is a harmless thing to do, except I was wearing a button that I'd gotten way back at a bookstore in Berkeley, back when the fatwa against Salman Rushdie was declared for his book, The Satanic Verses. And in solidarity with the writer, the button said, "I am Salman Rushdie." And I was wearing that button as I had myself photographed next to the Iranian mullah. I don't think he read English, though. And then we went wandering the streets in search of lunch. And, you know, the restaurant, well, first of all, we didn't read or speak any Farsi, absolutely none. And it was impossible to tell what was a restaurant and what wasn't. But by kind of tracking where all these men were going down this flight of steps into this underground little area, we just kind of followed them. And indeed, it was a small cafeteria-like room with about 12 cafeteria-type tables, the kind that you're used to from junior high school or high school, just kind of big, elongated picnic tables. And we walk in there, and it's just the glare of fluorescent lights. There's a Coca-Cola clock on the wall above the cash register. On either side of the Coca-Cola clock, there are pictures of two Ayatollahs, Khamenei and Khomeini. I can never really get them straight. It's like stalagmites and stalactites. I'm always sort of confusing them. Anyway, they were both up there next to this clock, and the head waiter, the guy behind the cash register, looked at us, and his face kind of sank as he realized that all of a sudden he had these two foreigners to deal with. So he sat us down at a table where we were sort of more or less, I thought, hidden from view, and handed us a couple of menus printed entirely in Farsi. Now, there were about 20 or 30 Iranian men in the room, all with big, thick beards, and they were all looking at us just continually from the moment we arrived to the moment we sat down. And we averted our gazes and looked down at these menus. And I don't know if you've ever seen the Farsi language, but it looks like it was written by an inchworm on absinthe scrolling across the page. And Sam and I just look at each other and you know, he goes, what's for lunch? What's on the menu? And I said, I have no idea. And he looks around the room and he says, do you think we're Americans? And I just look back at him like he's crazy. And I said, we're like the infidels from Central Casting. Of course they know we're Americans. And I said, I'm like, well, I don't know what to get here either. And he says, well, let's just order Coca-Colas. So the waiter comes over and we order the Cokes. And meanwhile, everyone around the room is still looking at us. And I'm trying to see what's on their plates because this can help me maybe to just sort of, you know, to find out what to order. And I look across and next table down, there's a guy with a plate of some kind of meatballs and rice. And I pointed it and I say to Sam, that looks good. And the minute my finger is pointing, the guy just looks at me with this volcanic glare and starts shouting in Farsi for the in Persian, in Farsi for the waiter. And the waiter comes over and he just starts pounding his newspaper on the table and saying, you know, so-and-so, American, blah, blah, American, American. And I'm turned away really quickly. My face is just blushing scarlet. And I just look at Sam, and Sam looks at me and he says, this is not exactly Applebee's. And I said, no, you know, I'm not sure how long, if we should stay here. And Sam goes, no, don't worry. Everything's good. Let's just try to figure out a few things to order. And I keep looking around the room, and every time I sort of meet the eye of someone who's eating lunch, they just glare at me and they scream at the waiter and they point at us, and it's just clear that we're not welcome. I've been in a lot of places in my life, traveling in a lot of different countries, and I started to feel this sense building in the room, this kind of air of menace, like we were really in trouble. And I looked at Sam and I said, you know, I think we ought to get out of here. And Sam says, I agree with you. I think we're on the same wavelength. This is not a pretty situation. And I'm like, how much should we leave for the Cokes? And he says, a lot, you know, leave a lot of money and make sure that there's a big tip too. So I just pull out like a wad of bills and I throw them on the table, and we sort of gulp down our Cokes. And as I'm doing that, some of this big guy has sort of walked up and is walking, kind of passing behind me. And I turn to Sam and I say, let's go. And we try to stand up, but there is something holding me down, overcoming the force of gravity. And I just glance to my right, and there's a huge hand covered with black hair pushing down on my shoulder with sufficient force to keep me from actually budging in my seat. And I crane my neck up, and I look at the guy who's attached to the hand, and he gives me this look, and he shakes his head, and it's just the universal language, you're not going anywhere. And Sam and I stare at each other, and the reality of what's happening dawns on us simultaneously. We're being kidnapped in Iran. We're about to be kidnapped. And, you know, for Sam, this was an absolute disaster. His software company was just about to do an IPO, and it was just moving forward with the momentum of a greased marmot on a water slide, and he had to be back in the United States like in 5 days, you know, for this IPO. I had a very different attitude. I mean, for me, my eyes just lit up. You know, I imagined what was about to transpire. There'd basically be a year in captivity with the inevitable, you know, episodes of despair and boredom and angst, and then my inevitable release and hopefully a 6- or 7-figure book contract. And
I'm sorry. This is what happens. He has baby in the room. This is what you get. All right.
And the movie rights, of course, unless the numbers look better from HBO. So I'm sitting there, and just kind of all of these sugar plums are dancing through my head, and I had just barely started to spend my advance when the door to the kitchen burst open, and this huge man came charging towards me with his hands completely full. But the guy wasn't carrying any weapons. He was carrying this filigreed tray. And on top of the tray was just this selection of almost every kind of food the restaurant offered. The tray was just laden with kebab and koresh, with dolmeh and masht, with kuku and kofte, a pile of lavash bread and a huge tureen of rice. And it was apparently true that what had happened was that every single person in the restaurant had been looking at us and telling the waiter to send us his favorite dish. And the waiter and the cook stood there above us, watching us eat, their hands on our shoulders. They wouldn't let us leave until we were completely and absolutely bloated. When we were finally done, they brought the check, charging us only for our Cokes. And, you know, I stood up to leave, and I looked around the room. No one was smiling. Everyone's still glaring at us in what I realized in Iran passed for friendly hospitality. And I just thumbed through my phrase book, and I finally lit on the only phrase that seemed to make any sense in the circumstances, which was "Chubkari nakon," your generosity puts me to shame.
That was awesome. Oh my God.
This is Snap Judgment from NPR. Of course, you know that on this special podcast edition, we've taken the initiative to play for you some very raw tape that we've gathered while auditioning talent for our upcoming television show. We encourage you to check out our website at www.snapjudgment.org. There you'll find information on our upcoming television show, live storytelling events, but most importantly, you'll find out how you can be part of the action. Yes, we would like to hear, see, and feel out your stories. You can leave them on our storyline by calling 888-304-SNAP. That's 888-304-7627. And you can also get us your stories in pictures, words, and videos by leaving it on our site. That's www.snapjudgment.org. And just a warning that the following segment contains explicit imagery.
And to take us on out, we have a moment from none other than the fantastic Jamie DeWolf. Jamie, if you don't know it, is the MC and creator of Tourette's Without Regrets. It's a show, if you haven't seen it, see it at once. Run, sprint if you have to.
Anytime a woman ever asks me, does this make me look fat? My answer is always, honey, absolutely. You look like a hippopotamus in a tumi with a sumo wrestler in a pigsty. Like the notorious B.I.G. got locked overnight in the Willy Wonka chocolate factory. You need me to rip out your own eyes, turn them around to show you that you are hot. You are beautiful. I could get a hard on watching you clean your ears with a Q-tip. Yeah, look at you saying, I think I'm getting a gut. What are you, Kate Moss on a Coke binge prize? Another woman who's unhappy with their bra size. Honey, what if a bunch of men decided that our God-given testicles just weren't big enough and they sag too much? So now I got a ball job so I could rock these bad boys in a Z-cup. I don't need to wear beer goggles because you are top shelf and you have raised the bar. And I will kiss every zit on your ass to show you flesh is an insult to what you are. Your body is the word fire spelled out in Braille, and the blind can feel your heat even if it was sent through the mail. And if you're as beautiful on the inside as you are on the out, I bet you have the hottest spleen that no one has ever seen. So spit out that taste of defeat, shake that puddin' ass on two left feet, come over here and love, man. Girl, let's bump uglies, cause I don't need a microphone to scream that you are hot. You are beautiful. So break your mirror with your fists. Do whatever it takes for you to admit there's no refund on your body, so you just gotta own it. Because the most beautiful people in this life are the ones who never know it. Thanks.
That was today's Snap Judgment podcast. Now remember, we can't do this by ourselves. If you have a story to share, you owe it to the world and to me personally to let us know about it. What is this? Your local public radio station doesn't carry Snap Judgment yet? You better let them know that you want to hear the fattest show on the public radio dial. Peace out. And may all of your Snap Judgments be good ones. DJ Smooth Grooves, today I want to go out with something old school. Take us back to at least 1973, 74, something like that, way back in the day. Thank you. Thank you very much. Snap Judgment was produced by myself, Glenn Washington. But never alone. Never, ever alone. Give it up for Uber producer Mark Ristich, the god of war and radio, one Roman Mars, and did your roof spring a leak? Your hair won't curl, toast won't even toast. The solution is plain, my friends. Best to get you some Rebecca Megahertz. The producer of this very podcast, listening, judging, and condemning all she hears out of my mouth right now is Snap Judgment's own podcast producer, Rita Daniels. Our fearless crew, Tinker, Taylor, Soldier, Spy, Will Urbina, Music Man, a.k.a. DJ Smooth Grooves is Ben Bracasio. Sarah Jesse keeping it real, making sure that ballet stays funky. You know how funky ballet is. Our story master, Stephanie Fu. Christian Pollock, because he don't take no sass, and we don't either. Listen up, at snapjudgment.org, we've got pictures, podcasts, movies, everything. This is not the show. This is the podcast, but if you want to hear full episodes of the Snap Judgment program, you just go right on ahead. Go on ahead with your bad self. Download them at snapjudgment.org. This has been Snap Judgment from NPR.